What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
Thanks for listening to Project Schoolyard Volume 2. For more information about the project, as well as lyric to the songs on this CD, please visit www.tightrope.cc. You can also find jokes, news articles, a photo gallery, free CD downloads, and a secure online shopping cart. We carry a full line of flags, t-shirts, CDs, books, stickers, and other products of interest to racially conscious white people. Please visit www.tightrope.cc.
You've made a serious investment in protecting yourself and your family. You've purchased the gun, the ammunition, the training, and even secured a license to carry in your state. You know the Constitution and don't believe you should have to pay for a right that you already have, as written in the Second Amendment, but you are law-abiding. Now you are considering the legal defense options you should have if you ever have to use a firearm. Self-Defense Fund is a comprehensive litigation membership backing you on appeals, legal expenses, court costs, and more. Up to $1 million per incident and unlimited attorney costs per member. Discover selfdefensefund.com for yourself. Any weapon, any state, any time.
Now's your chance to get the last of the Resolution Radio Blood Teas. Only a few left available before we try to do a reorder. This has been a high-selling item, and we really appreciate everyone's support in getting this shirt and showing their pride as well as showing their heritage. Nothing counts more than blood. Get yours today from Resolution Radio. Only $25 plus $5 shipping and handling. It really helps the network improve, and you really get a great product to showcase what you truly believe in. Nothing counts more than blood. Only from Resolution Radio at resolutionrdo.com. Send check, money order, or well-concealed cash to Sonny Thomas at P.O. Box 27, Springboro, Ohio, 45066. That's Sonny Thomas at P.O. Box 27, Springboro, Ohio, 45066.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Thank you for joining us. Get the pleasantries out of the way. We're here to conduct ourselves as good examples of white men and women. Also, we operate 100% within the confines of the law, so at the end when we open it up for discussion, if anybody makes any remarks that would be seen as contrary to that, we'll have to mute you. That being said, let's go ahead and get started. I was doing a lot of thinking lately, really, and it seems to keep coming up in so many other places that it just keeps bringing the thought back to my mind about family and about our women and about the 14 words and really putting it into practice. And I heard somebody the other day that said to me that they didn't have time to read because of how many hours they worked at their job. And I don't know, I felt a little mean internally because I just kind of chuckled at it. I think the truth of it, if we're all being honest with ourselves, really myself included, is that you don't have a time to work your long job and read and also go bowling and also go to the bar on Friday night or also play that video game you really enjoy. And I'm not saying any of those things is bad. I enjoy all of the things I just named. But I think that priorities and commitment is so relative and so relational to the things that matter most to us. And that's why I chuckled about it, because I find it so important to educate myself on what we're facing, what's come before us, on what's worked, on what hasn't worked. And then also personally, you know, my own study of my faith. And I know when I posted about this today, I said that we were going to talk about some religion stuff. And honestly, to be clear, I'm not really going to even entertain the idea of approaching theology really in any way. I'm going to talk about it more in a historical sense, and also in the sense of why it's so important to know what you believe and why. So that's what I'll get into. But I'm going to get a little circuitous. So the first thing that I want to talk about is women and family. You know, we say the 14 words all the time. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. And it's very easy sometimes, you know, especially in these circles, we crack a lot of jokes about, you know, a woman's place is in the kitchen or to be quiet. And even from a religious perspective in Christianity, there's a hierarchy to the roles of man and woman in the household. But I think that sometimes in that we lose the importance of our women. And I just picked up a book recently called Women in the Third Reich, written by Elsie Frobenius. I haven't really gotten too far into it, but I wanted to share the first chapter of it. Now, the blurb on the back basically shows that she was born in 1875. She had an evangelical religious upbringing. And then in 1919, she joined the German People's Party. And then in 1930, she actually switched over to the German Workers' Party and wrote a book of propaganda that addressed the women's role in the National Socialist State. So that's the book that I have here. And the first chapter of it is actually just a letter that she wrote that I'd like to read, because I think this is a very important perspective. It begins with a quote from Adolf Hitler from the 23rd of March, 1933. And he said, "I shake hands with anyone who commits himself to Germany." Now, a lot of this is very Germanic. A lot of the Third Reich in general and Nazism in general, the history that you learn is very Germanic. I think that we can apply it to the white race as a whole. So when you hear Germany, I would just think of it in that perspective. But let me read this letter she wrote. It says, "Women are the heart of a people. Their love is his love. Their hatred is its hatred. If a thought, a feeling is to permeate the whole people, women must seize it, shape it into experience of the hearts. For they shape the souls of the children of our people and create the spiritual heir of the home that shall carry our faith and our love. The revolution of the German soul is inconceivable without the participation of women. Only when we have made ourselves its bearers can it penetrate every cell of our people. Can it begin its truly victorious journey through the centuries? Never has the task set for the German woman been so great. She stands at the sources of the new stream of life that should glow through us all. She must animate the sanctuaries of our people anew. Our Führer, Reich Chancellor Adolf Hitler, wants to renew Germany from the people. He is building the state for the people, whom he wants to place under new, anciently given laws. To achieve this goal, he is forging us together into a new unity of will, demanding that we become Volksgemeinschaft. Everyone must strive to realize this demand so that the mighty goal of the leader may be attained. This requires purposeful work, which each one must carry out in himself and in his surroundings. We are still far from our goal. Millions who helped the National Socialist Revolution to victory by their vote and who profess their joyful confidence in their leader have nevertheless not yet penetrated the meaning of his life's teachings, especially among women. There is still much confusion about the demands to be made upon them in the Third Reich. There is a domestic misapprehension of the magnitude of the tasks assigned to them, and they seek the realization of the deepest womanhood on a plane other than that which exists today. But we women should embrace the demands of today with faithful optimism. They touch so deeply the life of the blood and the soul that we are infused with new strength and a new will to live when we have given ourselves over to their lawfulness. They consist, in the words of our Reich Chancellor, in the penetration of the whole people with the National Socialist Weltanschauung. This paper wants to enlighten, wants to try to outline the main features of the tasks of women in the Third Reich, as far as it is already possible today. It starts from the external experience, which is common to us all, and shows the path which each must find for herself from within. Its basic sound is the feeling, which is the origin and goal of the national revolution, and which should give direction to every individual life. For Germany, we live and die. So that's the entirety of her letter. And I think that two things that I find very important there are, if you listen to her overt patriotism, it's very clear that the meaning of National Socialism and the future of her race and her nation is the most important concept she could possibly imagine. The other is when she says that women are the lifeblood of a nation, and it's so true. We hear that old adage, you know, happy wife, happy life, which I actually don't like. I think that it really dismisses the importance of that relationship to a little truism, I guess. But it's true that the woman in the house raises the children, has the ear of her husband, and is a glue force within the home. It's very important. And it's funny that I was reviewing this today because I saw Gottmit Uns, if you haven't checked out that Telegram channel, has an amazing interview with the wife of Dietrich Heydrich, Dietrich Reinhardt. Heydrich Reinhardt, geez. Sorry, I've got so many notes in front of me. And it was really good because he was known as a butcher in Poland. It was obviously not really the truth once propaganda got a hold of his story, but he was a devout Christian, Germanic Lutheran Christian, and she refuses to speak bad about his name. He was assassinated under the endorsement of the Allied forces in 42 or 43. Very sad. He was a good man. It's a good interview if you want to check it out. I would play it here, but I think it would take too much time. So when I think about my faith and my family, it's really more of a story of how I came to the white nationalist movement. It was probably about 6 or 7 years ago, and I'm going to be vague on some of these points just for the sake of anonymity. But I was open about being Christian, and I had very nationalistic views, or so I thought, I guess as much as any normie could possibly have. And a friend of mine asked me in a conversation, because it was such a hot topic during the run-up to the first election with Donald Trump, if I was a Christian nationalist. And I didn't really know what to say because I had never heard that term before. But I did think, well, you know, I am a Christian and I do believe in nationalist concepts, so I would say so. But I could never get the question out of my head. And so it led me down a path of a lot of research. And I really started to find out that the Jews were the source of all these problems in so many ways that it was undeniable. And that causes a big cognitive dissonance. And this is where I wanted to discuss a little bit of religion with the Bible, because in Judeo-Christianity, a term which, ironically, if you look at a chart, only rose in usage and understanding after the establishment of the State of Israel in 1948. Prior to that, it wasn't even a term, really. So that tells you that this is something that is not long-standing in Christian tradition. And I always had a question from a very young age, which I think anybody here who's even not religious could understand, which is, you know, the main teaching of Christianity in a Judeo-Christian sense is that the way to heaven is to believe that Jesus Christ was the Messiah and died for your sins and rose again, and that's the way you get to heaven. The irony then becomes that they also will teach you that the Jews are somehow God's quote-unquote chosen people, and yet their entire religion is predicated upon denying everything Christians think is necessary for getting to heaven. It's a very dissonant concept when it's approached in that way. I could never make it make sense. But even when I started down the path of understanding nationalism and seeing these problems for myself, it was challenging even for me to approach it, because it was ingrained in me from the way I was raised, and I think many of us were before we woke up, that I can't really think that in some way I would be offending my God to say that the Jews were a problem. But I'm also somebody who believes in real information, and I thought that the information was so undeniable that we had a problem, that there had to be more truth to it. And for me, that put me down a path of reading my Bible more. And what I found was very interesting to me. And I'm not, again, as I said, going to get into the theology of it, but some things that are important to understand are things like the word Jew. So many people who are oppositional to Christianity, and I'm sure many of you have heard this, will say things like it's a Jewish religion, or Jesus was a Jew. And in the text of the Bible in English, it's very easy for you to take that. And again, this is not to be theology. If we look at the original languages, what you come to find out is actually very interesting. And this is how I did this study. Now, before I get into the original languages discussion, let me give it some credibility, because so many people who are skeptical will say that it's not provable. And again, this is all history. This is all fact. I'm not giving you theology here. I want to be very clear about that. But the Bible is the oldest ancient text we have in the world today that has been proven for thousands of years to be unchanged in its original languages. When we talk about things like the King James Version of the Bible, this New American Standard, all these different translations of the Bible where people say, well, the words were changed, that's not what it really means, those statements are true. I'm not here to lie about that or to dismiss them and be an apologist for the accuracy of an English Bible. But when I talk about the original languages being proven unchanged and staying what they've always been, I'm basing this on historical fact. And a lot of it is actually fairly recent historical fact. The Dead Sea Scrolls that were discovered in the 1900s really lent credence to this. And so what you had there at the site of the Dead Sea Scrolls, I can't remember the name of the place, it's escaping me. I know what it is. But the point is that here you had hundreds and thousands of these scrolls buried. There was a group of scribes that lived there. Back in the day, you didn't just go and print a book the way you do today. And I also think it's topical that the first printing press, the Gutenberg, the first book it printed was the Bible in German. But you had a culture of scribes. They were called the Assyrians, and they lived in this location. And so there were many, many copies of the same scriptures. And we could put them side by side, and they would be identical. We're able to date them. We know exactly how old they are. And the more interesting thing is that not all of these scrolls were perfectly preserved. You don't have an entire scroll that lays out, you know, the book, and there's no issues. Many of them were deteriorated and degraded. And the way they were able to say, okay, well, this comes from, you know, Jeremiah, this chapter, this verse is very simple because it was so unchanging that you could take a copy of the scripture that was intact and you could lay these little broken pieces on top of it in places and it would match perfectly. And so even though you only have a couple characters on this tattered fragment, you'll then be able to say, okay, well, this was a greater copy of this overarching work. And so the reason I point this out is because the Bible has been unchanged in its original languages for over 3,000 years, and it is the most verifiable ancient document in the world today. Now, the reason this is important is when we talk about things like the word Jew, and people say that Christianity is a Jewish religion or that Jesus was a Jew. Even without getting into theology that many of you will refer to as Christian identity and the true identity of the Jews, here are some facts that you can verify. Number one is that when you're talking about this quote-unquote chosen people belief, it's not there. The Bible does discuss a covenant people, and their name was Israel. They were never called Jews. They were called Israelites. Now, the interesting thing is in the book of 2 Kings, which is actually many books into the beginning of the Old Testament, is the very first time the word Jew even appears in the Bible. And what I found, going back to the original Hebrew, in the New Testament, it's always Greek and it's always one word. But in the Old Testament is where it's interesting because that word, English word Jew or Jewish or Jews, plural, when you would look it up in the original language, you're actually dealing with like five different words. And for some reason, when it got converted into English, all of those words became Jew. But some of them were practicers of Judaism, like the Jews we know today. But then you could also have people whose bloodline was such that they descended from one of these 12 tribes of Israel known as Judah. It could also be that they were born or were living in a region where modern-day Israel now is, known as Judea. It could also be, and this is, again, at the same time in 2 Kings when we first see the word Jew, you know, descendants of King David, Solomon, not going to get into all of it. Basically, these 12 tribes, these Israel tribes that God had a covenant with, get themselves into a whole bunch of trouble by not following the rules they're supposed to follow, and they split. And 10 of them go north, and 2.5 of them go south. And the northern kingdom is still referred to as Israel, and the southern kingdom is referred to as Judah. So other times, when you are seeing this English word Jew, it's actually talking about somebody that descended from maybe Judah or Benjamin or Simeon. These are other names of tribes of Israel. And this might not sound interesting to you, but the point is that once you understand that my Bible is not telling me about Jews all of the time, it's... All right, I'm back. Dropped for a second. I apologize. And if you don't think that it's important to look at what we're up against from a religious context, I'll simply say it to you like this. If the Jews are the enemies, this is entirely religious for them. So it's very important to at least understand what you're dealing with and what the truth of it all is. And so I think that that's important. I think also that people in their understanding of modern Christianity think that, you know, Jesus was love. And that's a very gayed down version of what it truly is. You know, first of all, the quote from George Lincoln Rockwell comes to mind a lot. You know, that without a deadly hatred for that which threatens what we love, love is but an empty catchphrase for hippies, queers, and cowards. And I think that's very true. You know, we all grew up hearing that phrase, friends don't let friends do drugs. Well, why is that? Because you love your friend. And love isn't going to accept everything and tolerate everything and be okay with everything. That's not real love. Real love calls you into accountability and makes sure that you're on the right path and it keeps you correct. So it's really important to not believe the common conceptions of these things that we hold so important. And I think that that also applies directly to National Socialism. I know that there's a lot of debate on Hitler's views. And so I'm not going to get into that. I think there's evidence of both directions. But we can certainly say this, that the Fatherland was a group of Germanic Lutheran Protestants, and that Hitler saw the importance of allowing that to flourish and saw it as a cornerstone aspect of the culture that he wanted to foster. And then George Lincoln Rockwell also in the 60s made remarks on Christianity, saying that he wasn't a believer in Christ per se, that he didn't know what he believed in, but he did believe that the moral structure set up by Christianity was one that would foster a successful nation. And I often ask people, if you don't believe in a higher power that authored your moral code, then from where do you derive that? If there's no higher authority that's going to give you a compass and tell you what is expected for righteousness, and ironically, it works every time when obeyed and followed correctly, and only fails when a mistake is made by you. And so if you're not going to get that from a place, what you're left with is trying to come up with a rational system in your own mind for what is right and what is wrong. And some people think that they can do that successfully, but what it ignores is that if that's the truth of existence, then the same is true for every person around you. So for you to believe what you believe, to have the values that you value, to believe that race mixing is wrong, or to believe that segregation is right, these things are only right in your mind because of your personal moral code, and somebody who opposes you has just as much secular validation to feel what they feel. And so there's really no ultimate purpose. And so for me, that's why I choose to apply my faith so rigorously to what I expect from the world. You know, whether you have faith or not, we can all agree that your life is very short. If you're like the most lucky person alive, you'll get a century, and then you're gone, and you don't come back, and you don't get to do it again, and you don't get to make up for any of your mistakes. So really, the best thing you can do is set yourself about leaving a legacy that will carry through your generations and make the world a better place and make as few mistakes as possible. And so, like I said, I was going to get circuitous with it. But that brings us back to children and why they're so important and how it's such an investment that we can make. And sometimes when I talk about that particular topic, I almost feel guilty for a number of reasons. Firstly, I have an amazing wife. And when I first started getting interested in National Socialism and coming to the truth that I was, she was actually my biggest cheerleader. She was doing research on her own that I was unaware of for a time and bringing things to my attention and saying, you know, I heard this or I saw this. What do you think about that? I think we should look into that. And so she was a very active participant. She was very supportive. I know for a lot of young men in the movement, it's very hard to find a woman like that. And even if you do, to have the level of success and respect and appreciation that my wife and I have one for another is very difficult to find. And it hurts me when I see young men who are single, who want to get married, who want to have children, who want to further that particular aspect of our cause and our movement. It hurts me because it's such a rewarding thing. It's such a long lasting thing. It's very important and I wish it for everyone. So it's hard, but again, going back to my faith to maybe explain how deep it is for me with my wife is that I don't see marriage as a terminable thing. And that's not to, you know, denigrate people who have had situations that didn't work out. Everybody's life is different. But for me personally, it's a permanent commitment. And that's also how I view commitment entirely. And we've talked about that before in other streams. If you agree to do something, if you say that this is the way a thing is, then you don't give up. If you give up at any amount of difficulty, then you were never fully committed, in my opinion. And of course, you can't control the actions of another person, but I was lucky enough to find a woman who looks at the world exactly the same way. And part of that comes from our faith. And so I wanted to share a reference from the Bible for that explains it well. And again, this isn't really theology so much as it's giving you more of an understanding, if you don't have one personally already, of how important my faith says it is for a man and a woman to be together and joint in this. So in Genesis 2:23, after God makes Eve, Adam says, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man." And that for me is something that I have felt come out of my mouth so many times in moments of adoration for my wife, because that's how it feels. We feel like a unified force. And there's moments where I just simply can't believe that we're different people. And then it follows that up. The very next verse says, "Therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they shall be one flesh." So even there, it's talking about that same idea. And this is very important, to make those commitments and decisions, to have a woman who wants to raise your children. It's a very difficult thing to find, but it's so important to have that commitment and to not be willing to give it up when things get hard. And it's going to get hard. And, you know, I can tell you it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. I take it very seriously because they are the next generation. And now two people are the same. One of them you could probably talk to very directly about what we believe and what we're up against, while another is going to have to be approached very differently and empathetically. And it's not easy to have a bunch of kids. It's very expensive, especially if you're able to live a life where only the husband is working and the wife is taking care of the home. It's very expensive. It's not easy at all. And you never know when you're done. I remember when I was young, I said, "Well, I'm going to stop having kids when I'm 30 because I don't want to have kids into my 50s. And then it was like, "Well, you know, we should have one more. I'm okay in my 50s. Now I'm almost 40, and I've got one who's well into their teens, and I've got one who's an infant, and I want to be done, man. I'm getting old." But now my whole thought process is, you know, at 60, you're still working. You're still working. The Zog system doesn't let you retire now until you're almost 70. If a man can work a job, how can I not raise a child? I mean, that just seems selfish and lazy. And so if I have the means, maybe I should have another one. And I don't know. I still am real tired. I got enough. But the point is that it's a very important thing that we're doing, building the future here. I think that we need to have a morality that lends itself to commitment. I think we need to have a morality that recognizes the respect and the honor that we need to show to our women, because the sacrifice that they're making to build that future with us, a future that would be impossible without them, is something that must be respected and appreciated. And I think if we do that, then our relationships as a whole will be better, because that type of appreciation is what builds a goodwill between people, and it sets a good example for your children. And then finally, I think that we need an ultimate morality. We need a set of ethics. You know, we talk about white unity, and I think that just as important as white unity is, what are we unifying around and what are we uniting with? And we need to make sure that the morality we determine for ourselves, and so much of it really is built on Christian beliefs. You know, I think every National Socialist, everybody listening here, probably agrees that pornography is a poison and a horrible thing. But that's not what culture teaches you. And that's not what the world around you teaches you. Hell, that's not even what other religions teach you. You've got over-sexualized Eastern religions whose entire concepts of tantric yoga is to achieve enlightenment through various sexual positions. And you have Jewish thought leaders like Dennis Prager putting out videos explaining how pornography is not bad. In fact, it's good for you. You know, so a lot of these things that we recognize as being degenerate or bad for us are taken directly from Christian scripture and Christian codes of morality. And so I think that whether we, each of us individually, chooses to embrace a particular religion, it's very important to be honest with ourselves about what we believe and why. And I think that's the main point of what I wanted to share. And also that the Bible's not Jewish. But I guess that's my closing point on that. I rambled long enough, and I'd really love to know what everybody else thinks. So if somebody wants to chime in, I'll get you unmuted and we can talk.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
In the early 1900s, certain companies were off-gassing highly toxic fluoride gases into the atmosphere. The surrounding communities began to get sick. Laws were enacted to compel these corporations to install scrubbers to convert these gases into fluorosilicic acid, still highly toxic, but containable. Now these companies had a stockpile of this poison, and there was no affordable way to dispose of it. Lucky for them, one of their major stockholders was also the Secretary of the Treasury, who was responsible for the Public Health Service at the time. And by 1950, the U.S. government began buying this toxic, untreated industrial waste product and dumping it into our drinking water. Reputable studies show that it's causing various cancers and other disease. With the Alexa Pure Pro, you can have clean drinking water and a remedy to this madness. Available now at InfoWarsStore.com.
Hi, Clown. You're good to go.
Okay, there we go. Right. No, whereas I don't believe the Bible is inherently Jewish, it is inherently a Semitic religion, and it is one that is foreign to white people. But as you said, it has created a certain standard for whites and white nations to abide by. But I also would like to say that we can have morality without religion. I personally am more well honest and not Christian, even though I don't really necessarily believe in any of it, the gods or goddesses and whatnot. I do believe that we must have a certain standard of morals and ethics in order to maintain first world civilization, because otherwise we divert to just the base barbarism of Africa, and it's just every man for himself. It's a free-for-all, and we're bashing each other over the heads for a sip of water, a piece of food. Otherwise, yes, I do partly believe that Christianity has developed many of the ethics that we all abide by now, but I think it gets too much credit, and I think ultimately it is because of the the foresight that whites have developed, that we've come to realize that we, okay, if we want to have these higher standards of living, it's we have to be good to each other and not just screw around with each other's wives and all that too. And because otherwise, if a man's willing to cheat on his wife, he's willing to cheat on me. And we've developed that kind of foresight over time. And that's why, like you were saying earlier, it's so important to develop these relationships and be true to each other and what's the word I'm looking for? Be monogamous. Monogamy is extremely important. So those are my takes on it. And also with the Dead Sea Scrolls thing, some of them were proven false too. At least the ones that, of course, the Israelis sold to the ones in Washington, I believe. And I believe that's it for me.
Well, thanks for chiming in. I appreciate it. And I think that's kind of what I was leaning into with that one thing I was saying about Rockwell, where even if he wasn't a believer, he recognized it was a superior moral code. And I think that's the importance that I'm trying to convey. But thank you very much for your perspective. Anybody else? Sally, you're good to go.
Thank you, Bob. I just wanted to say I appreciate the topic, and I think obviously being a woman, it kind of it's close to my heart, because sometimes when you go to, say, a white nationalist gathering and there's not always a lot of women there, that's not always the case, but it definitely has a connotation of being something of a men's thing. I guess women aren't always inherently political, or they don't think that they are. So sometimes it's hard to sort of, it's hard to know how to reach them. So I am definitely going to check out, I think, is it Invisible Empire that has the Women in the Third Reich book out? I meant to get it when it first came out, but I never did. So I'm definitely going to check that out, because I think that's something that, we really need to start reaching our women more and make this movement welcoming to them going forward, because I just feel like sometimes it's hard to couch it in terms that that women are going to resonate with. Obviously, with the family, that was such a huge part of Hitler's vision, with the Mother's Cross and all of the different organizations in the NSDAP that were specifically for women. So I definitely think that's an important part of what we're doing, and definitely something that I want to work on myself. So anyway, thank you for the topic, and I'll sign off.
Yeah, thank you very much for chiming in. Thank you for being a part and doing what you can for that cause, and I hope that we continue to grow and we find more people just like yourself. We certainly need it. We can't make this thing last without it. So thank you. Anybody else? Vincent, you're good to go.
Can you hear me okay right now?
Yep, you're loud and clear.
Okay, good. Yeah, very good. Good job, Dale Lumberjack Bomb. Interesting topic, very good topic. I guess the only thing what prompted me to kind of chime in was, and I hope I don't put anybody off at all, it's just what's on my mind, and I'm more than open to any correction or just shut up about it, but I couldn't help but think, you didn't get into any theological thing, and everything you said was great. Heck, I've been hearing so much Christian identity ever since I guess it's that Eurochat that's kind of opened me up to some Christian identity. I'm not knocking it, but I guess what I'm getting at is, as far as any of the movement, if I can say I'm a member of the movement, I have much of my stuff I still draw on in my mind is from the late Harold Covington. Now, when I mention that name, I don't know if you or any other people in this chat right now, do you know who I'm talking about? I get the sneaky feeling sometimes when I mention Harold Covington, either somebody doesn't like the guy or they don't know who I'm talking about. And
I'm not familiar personally, but I'd be interested in what you have to say about it.
Oh yeah, Harold Covenant. He died in like 2018. I met him. He's one of the proponents of the Pacific Northwest. That whole Northwest migration idea. It wasn't, you know, he didn't originate it. I think it came more so from the late pastor. I think his name is Richard Butler. Richard Gernt Butler. Was one of the advocates of that whole idea of moving to the Pacific Northwest and starting an ethno-state of, you know, exclusive to whites of unmixed European ancestry. And it sounds great. He's pretty persuasive, you know. I mean, I don't know many people who are ready to drop everything and go out there, but then again, he does talk about the character issue, you know. I mean, you know, back in the day, people loaded up Conestoga wagons and literally walked thousands of miles across the country to get to the Pacific Northwest, you know. But I guess the point I was talking about was... you know, just he made the idea of, as far as, and he talks about it in his novels, like The Brigade. You might have heard of The Brigade, one of his novels. The idea of not arguing so much about such fine points as, you know, how many angels can you fit on the head of a pin, although he said stormtroopers, right? But rather just irrespective of your CI, your Roman Catholic, or your Lutheran, you know, get together. We talk about the 14 words. That's paramount as far as us whites, you know. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I hope I made some sense, and I'm wide open to anything anyone has to say about that. Because, yeah, like I said, you know, I've read The Brigade. It's I guess comparable to the Turner Diaries, you know. And I just thought he had a lot of good stuff to say. Every time I turn around, I'd ponder what he would say in his novels or on his podcast, many of which he had. And oftentimes, I think this guy was right, you know. So. I'll be quiet, and I welcome any comments. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing, Vincent. I'll have to check that out. I've not been familiar with that name, so I'll get familiar with it, and then I'm sure I'd have more to say about it. But again, you know, I think overarching where you wrapped it up there is really, you know, what I'm getting at too, is that we need to unite around an expectation of what culture and morality is. And then we need to push that forward into a society structure that fosters that among our people. We can get into the fine points of doctrine and dogma later on, but that's where we need to start. I think without that as a cornerstone, it's always going to be doomed for failure. But thank you very much for sharing. Anybody else? Well, I do appreciate everybody who chimed in there. Again, I know it was a little... different topic tonight, but again, I hope anybody listening just recognizes I'm not trying to make you believe what I believe or trying to even say that my way is the right way, but I use it only as an example to show that I think it's a core factor of how I judge myself and how I hold myself responsible to commitments. I think that it's a truism for all of us, and it's very important to have that level of morality and build strong family units with that level of dedication. So that was my overarching point. I thank you all for your time. I hope you have a good week. Hail victory and white power.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
Recap for March 4th to 8th, 2024. Today's story. A black man is arrested for the knife murder of a 73-year-old grandmother, Bel Air, Maryland. A 73-year-old white grandmother was stabbed to death last Thursday after trying to intervene in an argument between her granddaughter and her black boyfriend. According to court documents, 24-year-old Angelo Terrell Spencer, who is black, was identified as the ex-boyfriend of Mary Catherine Bland's 17-year-old granddaughter. The documents alleged Spencer had purchased a glass cutter and a knife, using them to break inside Bland's residence prior to ringing the front doorbell. Court records indicate the 6'5", 300-pound Spencer then had an exchange with Bland, who answered the door before pushing his way inside the house. I think it was an interaction where it was, you need to get out, that kind of thing, and he reacted in a very psychotic and disgusting way, Bel Air Police Chief Charles Moore told WMAR. Yes, and used a knife to stab and kill her. Likely, dozens of stab wounds. After stabbing the elderly Bland approximately 25 times, police alleged Spencer then sexually assaulted the teenage girl upstairs before leaving the premises.
Today's story. Antifa fears right-wing Hungarian prisons following an infamous string of hammer attacks in Budapest, Hamburg, Germany. The parents of a fugitive member of a European Antifa cell, who now faces over 20 years in prison for her alleged role in a savage hammer attack in Budapest, now say their daughter will turn herself in after 13 months on the run. But only, they stipulate, if she faces trial in Germany, not Hungary, fearing punishment from a so-called right-wing populist government led by Viktor Orban. In February of 2023, the city of Budapest was rocked after a string of violent attacks were carried out by an international ring of anti-white extremists, commonly referred to as Antifa. Using hammers and other blunt force objects, police say members of the infamous Lena Engel Hammer Gang would ambush pro-white activists in the street, causing several life-threatening injuries to up to 9 victims. So far, 3 suspects have been indicted for the crimes, which Hungarian prosecutors assert were motivated by extremist ideologies.
Today's story. Drunk and high migrants suspected of a high-speed crash that killed a white father of one. Marysville, Washington. A white husband and father of one was tragically killed on Saturday when a drunk driver in a speeding SUV slammed into his car. For the crime, police arrested an illegal immigrant from Mexico who they say was smoking weed and drinking beers for hours before the crash. According to reports, 27-year-old Christopher Gadd, a rookie Washington State trooper working Interstate 5, was struck dead when a drunk driver slammed into the rear of his patrol car. The Snohomish County Sheriff's Office asserts that 33-year-old Raul Benitez Santana, a Mexican migrant with a lengthy criminal history, was responsible for his death. Alarmingly, a probable cause statement obtained by local news alleged that Santana had admitted to drinking beers and smoking weed hours before the deadly crash unfolded. A spokesman from the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, ICE, later confirmed that Santana is a citizen of Mexico and had illegally entered the United States at an unknown date. For more news like this, visit justicereport.news and subscribe to our Telegram, Substack, and Odyssey to keep up to date on all the latest headlines from around the world. Become a paid supporter and gain access to our full archive of audio articles. And enjoy the Justice Report on the go.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity. A call to action and a demand for adherence to duty of an Aryan resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. We have broken the chains of Jewish thought. We know not the meaning of the word mine, it is ours. Our race, the totality of our people. 10 hearts, one beat. 100 hearts, one beat. 10,000 hearts, one beat. We are born to fight and to die and to continue the flow of our people. Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. If months from now you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance, then you have in effect not only betrayed your race, you have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath upon the green graves of our sires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil. Kinsmen, arise. Look towards the stars and proclaim our destiny. Defeat never, victory forever.
In the early 1900s, certain companies were off-gassing highly toxic fluoride gases into the atmosphere. The surrounding communities began to get sick. Laws were enacted to compel these corporations to install scrubbers to convert these gases into fluorosilicic acid, still highly toxic but containable. Now these companies had a stockpile of this poison, and there was no affordable way to dispose of it. Lucky for them, one of their major stockholders was also the Secretary of the Treasury, who was responsible for the Public Health Service at the time. And by 1950, the U.S. government began buying this toxic, untreated industrial waste product and dumping it into our drinking water. Reputable studies show that it's causing various cancers and other disease. With the Alexa Pure Pro, you can have clean drinking water and a remedy to this madness. Available now at InfoWarsStore.com.
Do you want to fix America's police and take the country back in the process? If you answered yes, then CSPOA needs you. CSPOA.org, the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, is an organization comprised of citizens, sheriffs, police, and other government officials. We are taking America back sheriff by sheriff, county by county, and state by state. And we need you. Over 300 sheriffs constitutionally trained, we teach public servants the Constitution and need your help. Become a part of the solution today at CSPOA.org.
Hi, this is Ron Paul. I am a former congressman, physician, and presidential candidate. The world is in turmoil. Things like Ebola, earthquakes, wars, and famines are commonplace. As Americans, we are largely sheltered from these events. However, in parts of the world, just having enough food is a huge problem. For some of us, there is the nagging thought that we may not always have it so good. So we keep some food on hand just in case. My family and I have found a product that helps us do this better. It's a home freeze dryer from Harvest Right. With it, we eat healthier and store a little more food. We freeze dry everything we love to eat, and it lasts up to 25 years. Who knows what the future will bring? One thing's certain, my family and I will always have food on the table. To learn more, go to HarvestRight.com or call 800-763-5999. That's HarvestRight.com or 800-763-5999.